This is F1 Debrief, surprise, surprise. Coming up this episode, we discuss the epic reign in Suzuka, who we'd put in the HRT car, Renault's future, and the main man from Coldplay. Surprise!
Surprise! Oh, it's all gone a bit silly.
It has. We're back, sort of.
Are we?
Well...
did we go away?
I don't know.
Did anyone miss us? That's the question.
We could probably talk all day about why we went and how we feel now.
Should we do that?
I don't think we should do that, really. What I can say is we left after four races, and there are four races left to go. So it's nice. It's like bookends. It's kind of like the season that we want, you know, just eight races.
You want an eight race championship.
Yeah.
That's as much effort as we're prepared to put in.
It is.
Okay, so are we back for the rest of the season then? Four more races?
Yep.
Really? You've agreed, you're committing to that?
Possibly a podcast, a race, not every week. Okay. We'll see what happens.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Takuma Sato, who, despite crashing every single IndyCar going this year, was allowed back in a car at Suzuka this weekend. He was driving a Gunnar Nilsson car, whatever that is.
Oh, look at you. Miss, I've seen some IndyCar races. I know all about Sato.
I know
and
what
crashes.
I'm talking about. Yeah.
Show off.
It's been a bad week for Jenson Button, who admitted a case of mistaken identity earlier this year. But let me let him tell it in his own words. He said, "I had an American come up to me at the airport, Heathrow, a few months back. And she said, 'Me and my family are big fans of yours.' I said, 'Wicked, thank you so much. I didn't think Formula One was that big in America.' And she said, 'Yeah, we've got all your records, all your albums.' I was like, 'Fantastic. You think I'm Chris Martin, don't you?' And she went, 'Are you not?' I said, 'No, I race in Formula One.' She said, 'What's your name?' And I said, 'Jenson Button.' She said, 'Oh, my family are big fans of yours.' Yeah, of course they are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear.
That is a serious case of mistaken identity. I wouldn't want to be thought of as Chris Martin.
Viva la vida.
It's been a good week for F1 fans as the Japanese crowd proved just how dedicated we can all be. They sat there throughout the non-qualifying in the pouring rain, and Vettel came out of the garage at the end to applaud them. After the race, they sat in the grandstands and watched it all over again on the big screen. And finally, Button tweeted some concern for the European fans who were awake in the early hours to watch the non-qualifying. It's like they've suddenly remembered that we exist.
I'll tell you something, I am so glad that I wasn't at Suzuka. Those people must have been soaked. I bet they're still wet now.
It's been a bad week for Force India as the damages they won at the end of last year from sponsors Etihad and Aldar have been wiped out. The sponsors appealed that court decision and won as the British Court of Appeal agreed with them that the team had rebranded from Spyker to Force India without their approval, and so they were within their rights to cancel. Basically, Force India aren't going to be getting the $4.6 million they were hoping for.
Which makes sense because Malia came in with his airline. Is it Kingfisher Airlines? He came in, which obviously conflicts with Etihad. I couldn't see this going any other way, and that's less money for a team who seem to be quite short of it in the moment.
News and views.
Talking about court cases and such like, I heard there's a lot of fun going on with Lotus.
Lotus, Team Lotus this is, versus Group Lotus. Yep. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Do you actually understand this situation? Because if you're going to talk about this on a podcast,
yeah,
it's not the easiest situation in the world to understand.
Yes, it is.
Tell me what you think is going on between Team Lotus and Group Lotus.
People have explained it to me. It's simple.
Go on.
Well, you see, ages ago, there was this guy called Colin Chapman.
Just this bloke.
And he set up a team called Team Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
And he made some quite good cars and stuff. And then he also had this offshoot kind of thing called Group Lotus. And they did other cars, maybe not F1 cars. So anyway, Colin Chapman died and the teams and the groups got sold on to other people. Eventually, the Team Lotus section was bought by some people who have now sold it to Tony Fernandez, the guy who runs Lotus Racing that we know and love.
Mm.
And Group Lotus, who are still separate, they think that actually Team Lotus belongs to them and the other people weren't at right to sell it to Fernandez. See? Simple.
Right. For a moment there, I thought it was going to go a bit child's play. You know, when they get children to explain complicated things and you have to figure out what exactly they mean. But actually, nailed that. I didn't realise you understood the situation that well. The important thing I think you missed out is that Group Lotus were the engineering arm. They never did any Formula One races. Group Lotus make the cars, the road cars that you see driving around every day. The name Team Lotus has been sold on and on through various incarnations. It's now been, Tony Fernandez has now bought it. He says he's in charge of Team Lotus, the name that won, the famous mark that won all of the Formula One races of old. And there's a big argument and a big power play going on in Malaysia, oddly, for an English team, between various factions in Malaysia, and that everybody wants a piece of what Tony Fernandez has built up, because he's built Lotus Racing up from nothing. Effectively, it was just him and Mike Gascoigne who started off in a shed, effectively. And they've built it up. They've built a pretty decent team, I mean, they haven't won anything yet. They haven't done that well.
They're much loved, which is something.
I think they've got the respect of the Chapman family, which is the important thing. When they first started, I remember we called them Notus because we didn't think they were Group Lotus and didn't think they earned, they deserved the name, the Lotus Racing name. But it turns out they've proved us all wrong. They've changed my mind.
The respect.
Changed my opinion of them. And I'm backing Tony. Whose side are you on?
Well, I mean, it's quite complicated. I'm not good at this kind of thing. But I do know that in the comments, Maverick off of VivaF1.com. He said that the matter had already gone to court once.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has.
And Group Lotus were rejected the name for F1. There's a possibility they could get it for other racing series like GP2 or something. Mm-hmm. But for F1, it had already been decided that it wasn't their right to have that name. So if that's true, then I don't see how they could get their hands on it.
All of this does mean that next year GP2 might be worth watching. Never really shown much interest in that series, but Tony Fernandez has entered his team. Group Lotus have also joined with ART, who are a big team in GP2. They will be going head-to-head, and that will be the thing to watch next year. And I may tune into GP2 just because of this.
Goodness me. Well, then it's been worth something, I suppose. But Lotus Racing, who will become Team Lotus, possibly, they are forging ahead as if that's going to happen, because they've agreed with Red Bull for a supply of gearbox and things. Yep. And they've also dissolved their agreement with Cosworth.
And we assume they're going to take Renault engines.
That's the rumour, but it hasn't been confirmed, I don't think.
Which is odd. Well, you'd assume that by now that would have been confirmed. It was a little while ago. It was a week ago that Cosworth announced they were no longer going to be, they've been paid off by Lotus, and that agreement has come to an end. So at the moment, Lotus don't have an engine. We learnt from Ted News. You got a Ted News jingle? It's been too long. We learned from Ted News today, which is Monday following the Suzuka race, they're not getting this year's Red Bull rear end. They're getting the 2009 rear end, which isn't quite as good as the one Red Bull have developed this year. However, double diffusers are banned from next year, so it may not be as important. Actually, last year's might fit around the new diffuser regulations a little bit easier. Mike meant Lotus is a job much better. So you should see that team climbing up the order.
You certainly think that with Renault engines they'll do better, because Cosworth hasn't exactly shone much.
No, they've got to get the aero right, and they've got to get the drivers right. It looks like Kovalainen is going to stay because he's best mates with Tony. He bought his boss some new shoes recently. You got to love a driver that buys you new shoes. You're never going to fire him, are you? And I don't know whether or not, we don't know what's going to happen with Trulli.
Trulli,
every day it changes.
Well, that's a surprise. You know what Trulli's like with his Trulliometer, but he says that he thinks he's staying. He's basically confirmed it all but by saying, I have been signed again.
Right.
I think he said that he and Heikki make a good team and they'll do really well next year. So, I mean, we basically assume that it's going to be the same next year, but under the Team Lotus brand instead.
Good.
Talking of Renault, just when we got fed up of all the Lotus headlines, they decided to come and take the heat off of that team and made their own headlines.
It's been a quiet couple of weeks if it wasn't for Lotus and Renault.
Yeah, because firstly, there was the whole Kimi debacle.
Now, yeah, this is kind of weird. I quite liked the idea that somebody believed Kimi would actually come back to Formula One.
Well,
that
I certainly
is wishful
didn't.
Thinking. We've seen how happy he is in rallying. He seems like a completely different person there. And I think we've said in the past that we do not think for one second he's coming back to Formula One. However, Renault were happy to abuse his good name, according to Kimi, and use it to boost their profile.
Well, the weird thing is there obviously was some contact, and Kimi isn't denying that. He said that his people did talk to Renault, but it wasn't serious discussions, contracts were not on the table, nothing like that. But I'm surprised that there was any contact at all for a start, because like we say, we didn't think he was coming back. But then he said, there was no possibility of me going there, and I certainly won't be now that they've been bandying my name about like this.
To be honest with you, I suspect that Kimi's manager isn't telling Kimi everything. That's probably the biggest issue. I'm sure that he's using Renault to extract more money from rallying. And he hasn't exactly been completely open and transparent with Kimi. Or if he has, then Kimi's denying that that's the case.
So then Renault sort of tried to bury bad news with more bad news, because Bob Bell left the team. They confirmed that. And I was surprised, because it was like suddenly with immediate effect. It seemed like it came right out of the blue. But at the same time, it does make a lot of sense, because they are trying to get rid of everything that ever touched them in the whole Flavio
Well, I
days.
Liked Bob.
I did.
I mean, they can't get rid of everybody. Lots and lots of members of the team who existed around the Flavio era are still there. I mean, obviously Pat's gone. But I'm surprised that Bob left, because he filled Flavio's shoes very nicely. He did a very good job. He showed himself to be capable of managing a team under amazing amounts of pressure. last year. It seems a shame that they've ousted him. I mean, it really is Team Genie now, really, rather than Team Renault, isn't it?
But the weird thing is that Eric Boulier, your best friend, he is...
BFF Eric.
Yeah, he's taking over the role of managing director, which is what Bob Bell used to do, along with being team principal, which is what he already did.
Busy chap.
So those are two quite huge jobs, I'd assume. I mean, I don't really know what the difference is, if I'm honest.
He hasn't really learnt the art of delegation so well.
No.
He seems to be taking on more and more and more.
It does seem like they are two massive jobs. I mean, is there anyone lined up to take the place, or is he just going to...
No, he's just doing it.
He's just doing it.
That's it. There's been no talk. I mean, I don't know who else they'd get, even if they wanted it. If they wanted any transitionary period, they wouldn't have let the guy go. They'd say, okay, you got to work your notice. Because the other thing we don't know is, did he walk?
Where's he going to go?
And where's he going to go? You'd assume that if they wanted, or if they felt they needed someone like Bob, that they would make him work his notice and ask around and make sure they had someone to replace him. Presumably, you're not going to expect someone like Pat to come back. So I guess they're going to go without him.
And I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but they announced that Bob Bella left. And then in the immediate race following, all their wheels fell off the car.
Literally, the wheels came off the Renault wagon.
Yeah.
With the immediate departure of Bob Bell. That is unfortunate.
I bet he's smiling, though.
Yeah, that was a disaster. They don't have much luck with wheel nuts at that team, do they?
No, because it was Alonso's wheel that went bouncing off and caused all that controversy last time.
Mm. You'd pay double the attention to your wheel nuts after that. Interestingly, when Fernando's wheel came bouncing off, they were brought before the World Motorsport Council, and there was a potential ban given around for the next race. Yet when all of Robert Kubica's wheels fall off, they were all loose. Well,
yeah,
not a word. They nothing.
They didn't all fall off, but I think they admitted afterwards that it could have happened.
Yeah, they were all loose. One wheel went bouncing off, as it had done in Hungary with Fernando Alonso, and not a word was said to anyone, which is a good thing because obviously it was very controversial and unnecessary. And the new Jean Todt era in Formula One means we have a lot less controversy, thankfully. But it's interesting to note that you know, another wheel goes flying and no one's remotely bothered this year. The
race. Well, we seem to have meandered onto the subject of the race sort of organically, but actually we want to talk about the weekend as a whole.
Good weekend.
It was a bit mixed up, really, wasn't it? Right from the very beginning, because Hamilton had a big crash and that just signalled...
His weekend snowboarded from that point, didn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on with McLaren. They got it very wrong. They're pushing incredibly hard towards the end of the season in order to try and do their very best to seal the championship. They're struggling. And they brought a whole raft of new parts, many of which didn't work. The car, both McLarens looked a handful in FP1, a session I finally got to see for the first time in ages due to the timing being an acceptable 1 a.m. I think it was, or 2 a.m.
It's funny.
Which suits me fine.
It's a time zone that is not acceptable to me, but it is to you. So
absolutely.
You can't keep us both happy.
Normally I miss the Friday sessions that start at 9 because I'm asleep. But this works out much better. So I saw free practice one for the first time in ages, and neither McLaren looked happy. And it seemed as though the new parts they were bringing to the car weren't ready and they weren't working. And I think after Hamilton
didn't you say they helicoptered some things in?
It was absurd. I mean, I don't know how much money McLaren have to throw around, but clearly it's too much money. They after Hamilton trashed his car, they needed a replacement rear wing because they'd only brought, I think, two to the circuit on the Friday. And so in order to get it to
almost as if they think their drivers just wouldn't crash.
They obviously have a lot more faith in the driver than the driver does.
Because if you're at Williams, you're going to bring a load of
absolutely
of wings.
As many spares as you can find. They're used to that, but there obviously wasn't enough parts, and in order to get them to the circuit in time for a qualifying that didn't happen, I believe that
how annoying.
Yeah, really expensive, unnecessary expense. There you go. They helicoptered some parts in. I don't know how a rear wing would even fit in a helicopter, but there you go. That's what they did. They have more money than sense.
So they're really, really pushing for this year, even though, I mean, mathematically they're still in it, but it's not looking hopeful that they're going to win either championship. But they're still pushing, which is good. It's honourable to keep pushing and fighting. But when teams do that, it means they're not necessarily looking that hard at next year.
They have a history of doing this. They pushed really hard at the end of 2008 season. They admitted in 2009 that they weren't as prepared as they wanted to be for the new season. And I do feel as though they're just pushing too hard at the end of the season, especially considering they are still developing the F-duct that they pioneered at the beginning of the season, and that is banned next year. Why are you still working on a device that's going to be outlawed? Just, it works. It's not fundamental. Now, you know, you already have an advantage over the other cars because you have this working. Not that many teams have caught up and have a system as good as McLaren's, and yet they're still pushing on this device, which is going to be useless in 2011, and I just do not understand it.
Actually, whilst we are on the subject of McLaren, although this doesn't have anything to do with air ducts or helicopters or anything. You know, qualifying was quite confusing when it didn't happen. It was rained off, which was quite exciting. I don't think I've ever seen that happen before.
Yes, you have.
Have I?
2004 Suzuka, there was a tornado and they rescheduled it for Sunday. You were watching Formula One then. Don't tell me you weren't watching Formula One then.
Okay.
You may have forgotten, but you have seen a rained off Suzuka qualifying before.
Okay.
Fact.
Fine.
Lady.
I take that back. It was rained off. How exciting. Full stop. So I was watching the qualifying that didn't happen, which I have seen happen before, apparently. Mm. And suddenly I could hear the McLaren video. You know, was it a Vodafone viral video thing where Lewis and Jensen were trying to put a car together? All the mechanics disappeared off for a cup of tea or something.
From much earlier this year, that was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, suddenly I could hear this and I thought, what is going on?
F1.com, right?
Well, I didn't know that at the time. And I thought maybe the BBC were patching in some weirdo features because they didn't have anything to say. But there was nothing on my screen and it really confused me.
I hate F1.com.
Well, I thought for a second that Jensen and Lewis were trying to make a boat or something.
Right. Yeah, I can see the confusion. No, it's caught me out plenty of times. I despise it in every way, shape and form. Somehow.
Some kind of rollover ad.
There's an advert that occasionally appears for Vodafone on F1.com and all you have to do is put your mouse somewhere near the vicinity when you're trying to get to live timing. And it's always when I try to get to live timing. It's the only time I ever go to that blinking site. I try to get to live timing and Jensen and Lewis start rebuilding the car and it's so frustrating and there's no way of stopping it without refreshing the browser or leaving the page or whatever. It's just a nightmare. I can see exactly how you fell for that and I've done it before myself.
But building a boat would have been a good thing because that is apparently the done thing.
Oh, yes.
When there's a river running down the pit lane. I noticed that you do need an energy drink to be in F1.
Why is that? To build a boat?
Yeah, otherwise you've got nothing to send down the river.
Right, yes. Having said that, though, I thought Sauber made the best boat. Sauber made a really good boat out of foam.
Is that
and
the
they
one
don't have an energy
it
drink.
Had a black base and it had the flags on the top and everything. And it said SS Sauber.
Yes, it was like a mini Titanic. It was awesome.
Did it sink?
Not in an inch of water.
No.
But it was a done thing. I mean, the thing is, you may not remember this, but...
Was it in 2004?
No, it was in 2009, Brazil, when we had the extra long elongating
qualifying. I do remember.
The highlight of that, there were two memorable things from that qualifying session. One was an owl, who casually looked upon the whole season. You know, there was a lot of owl shots from FOM.
Okay.
And the other was the paper boat that went down the pit lane.
Yep.
And obviously...
They've upped their game.
Yeah, they did. Teams upped their game and they had a proper boat competition. We saw some boating in Canada. We saw it. There was a boat race between Williams and Lotus. That was on a proper river, whereas this time they made little boats. No one was really successful, though, were they?
No.
It wasn't an outstanding contribution.
Red Bull... made a good raft boat thing and Heikki was clutching his on the actual BBC coverage and they put it in the river and it just stopped and Heikki was like, oh yeah, it's just waiting for the red light. No, it's just rubbish.
Yes, it was stuck. I mean, you know, Huckleberry Finn couldn't drive a Formula One car, but he could make a blooming good raft. Formula One drivers should take note of that.
When qualifying did happen, it wasn't all that exciting in the end, but the big excitement was saved for the race day, which was a bit later on.
Was the same day.
Yeah, that's a bit confusing. But Lucas Degrassi kind of failed big time.
Somebody needs to make a fail picture.
I love him, but he's a bit fail.
What in the world happened? Nobody is taking any responsibility for what went wrong.
But also, we didn't see it. No one has seen it. There don't seem to be any...
Oh yeah, cameraman failed too.
There doesn't seem to be much evidence either way, because all we suddenly knew was, there's a virgin in the wall and the race hasn't even started yet.
Yeah. The television coverage was a bit of a disaster from the word go. They missed a lot of key moments. No camera seems to have properly caught the start of whatever happened, whatever occurred. And Virgin do not seem to be willing to take responsibility for it.
They've said there's nothing wrong with the car. No, the telemetry doesn't say anything was wrong. He said, well, no, it was fine and I wasn't going too fast and I didn't hit a curb. I just don't know what happened. Well, something must have happened. Mm. You don't just end up in a wall on your formation lap.
No. Somebody did it once before. McNish did that, I think. For Petit Le Mans, was it? One race we watched, I remember somebody was going to the formation lap and binned their car. Michael Schumacher once tripped over somebody. But very rarely do we find...
Probably they had a reason. They didn't just go, I don't know, it's a mystery. Normally it'd be like, yeah, my car broke. How annoying is that?
It's a complete mystery.
It's interesting because afterwards, I can't remember who it was, but in the comments said when he was interviewed, he didn't look embarrassed, which you might expect. He looked more disappointed because clearly this does not reflect well on him and he may be fighting for his seat at the moment.
So why aren't Virgin willing to give him a get out of jail free card? I mean, if he knew there was something wrong with the car, he would also... have been told by now, surely, and then come forward and said that's what happened. It's very, very strange.
It is strange. Neither of them have a reason to not say.
No, but nobody's saying. Hmm. Maybe they really don't know. They just looked at a pile of crumpled car parts and thought, they just shrugged.
Something happened.
Well, how strange.
And once the race started, there was even more chaos because four cars were out on the first corner, basically.
Terrible, terrible opening lap.
Well, Petrov shot forward and took out Hülkenberg, and it was a bit reckless. He's been given a grid drop for career.
Mm-hmm.
Bad behaviour.
Yeah. Presumably it's for the next race rather than career, because we're not certain career will happen. Or will he get away with a penalty? Presumably it's got to be for the next, it's got to be whatever is the next.
Well, career is looking more and more likely.
It
may be chaos. The track may not hold together, but it is looking more likely. So
we have to get through three free practice sessions and a qualifying session and a race, and that track has to hold up. I'm not convinced yet.
We'll say for now that he's got a grid drop for career. And also, Massa sort of did the same thing to a lesser extent.
What a wally.
And took out Liuzzi.
Yeah, he sideswiped Liuzzi.
But I think
not for the first time those two got together. Was it Canada that when they were bouncing off each other on the first corner like a bunch of pinballs?
Force India and Ferrari are not friends. Let's just put it that way.
Liuzzi and Massa, they just seem to be magnets for each other. Yeah. They just spend the entire race just banging wheels.
But
it's incredible.
Massa said, well, I think I saw him say somewhere that he felt someone tapped him first, or it wasn't necessarily his fault.
I heard somewhere he thought it was wind, which is just ridiculous. I'm sorry. Weird. No, nobody manages to swing you over the curbs, over a bump, and across from one side of the track to the other. No gust of wind can do that. It's not got a sail on it. I mean, you know what?
Maybe he was thinking of the boats again.
Just ridiculous. I mean, that's just a silly excuse.
With that in mind, there are a lot of rumours circulating about Massa at
Ferrari. I'm not surprised. I mean, I know they did a bad thing. Was it Hockenheim, the thing where they did the thing that we don't want to talk about? That thing.
There was a team orders issue.
That whole water under the bridge thing. But, yeah. You know, the guy was on for a race win, and no doubt that he took a punch to the chest with what happened. And clearly things haven't been the same since, because of the six fast cars in Formula One, there are five contenders.
And he's not one of them.
And the first of those five, they lined up 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, didn't they? And they finished 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, the five contenders in the five cars, and there's only one guy with a super fast car that's not there, and that's Massa. And if they'd have done that to me in Hockenheim, I'd be feeling exactly the same.
Yeah.
But that was a rather unforgivable move on that first corner. That was just rubbish driving.
Yeah, there's lots of bits that go into this, because clearly they are, I mean, favouring Alonso. Maybe not so much now because they don't need to, because Massa is being rubbish. Mm. But obviously Alonso is the number one in that team. But it's not the first time that's happened to him. He seems to have been number two all the time, really.
Yeah, that's true. When he was against Kimi, he was number one because Kimi had lost interest.
Yeah.
Maybe that changed him. Prior to that, I would agree he was Schumacher's number two.
But now the bit that interests me is that people are speculating on whether he might leave the team. So where would he go is one question. Maybe he could go to Renault. Maybe he could take that seat that Kimi doesn't want anything to do with.
Right, yeah.
But then he might be a number two over there because they have put a lot of trust in Kubica. So you never know what would happen. Would that be any better?
Yes.
But also the interesting thing is lots of people saying that he would take Rob with him. Now, we all know that we love Rob here at Sidepodcast HQ. Rob is awesome. But I wonder if the Massa and Rob thing is not the same anymore. I wonder if Rob took him up as far as he could go to winning the championship for 30 seconds or however long it was.
It was about 30 seconds, yep.
And now, basically, that's as high as they could go. And so it wouldn't really matter whether he was with him or not.
Well, they were doing well until Massa's accident. I think that the partnership was still working and that hadn't lost it. You could argue that maybe he's a slightly different driver now as a result of that. But I don't think they've lost anything. I don't think a relationship has lost anything. Maybe
the tricky thing is, we don't get to see or hear as much from them. So it's harder to gauge how close they are
because they're not at the front.
They're not at the front. Yeah. No one cares.
I genuinely suspect it was just what happened at Hockenheim. There was no way back from that, what Ferrari did. It's not a point to dwell on anymore, but that was the key point when it all changed for Massa. If I was him, I'd probably be looking to get out of there. But again, where do you go? Because McLaren's sealed and dealed.
I do get the feeling that at Ferrari, it is always a clean slate to start with. And so if he turned up in 2011 in the Ferrari and was faster than Alonso, then they would favour him. And I don't think that they would have a problem with that because they're always going on about this, we work as a team business. And I think that's true. So they don't really care who's number one, as long as someone is number one. If Massa might hold out again in the hopes that he could do better, but then it depends how he feels he compares to Alonso.
The question mark really for me is, do Ferrari still want Rob? because it was Rob that cost them $100,000, euros, yeah. whatever the price tag was, by his non-subtle radio message. Other engineers may have approached it slightly more subtly. I'm not saying what Rob did was wrong. I'm just thinking that maybe Ferrari didn't appreciate what he did in the
from
way
a working
he did it.
As a team point of view,
the execution
might not have been the best.
Could have been more subtle, and had it been more subtle, the uproar would have been less. Obviously, maybe if Massa thinks that Rob's going to be let go, then maybe he doesn't want to be around without him.
Yeah, so Massa might follow Rob. Rob might follow Massa. They might not go anywhere. It's all a bit up in the air. If we're going to do a bit of silly season talking, there's been plenty of movements within this season alone at HRT. Well, they can't keep a driver.
Remind me, who was driving for them this weekend? Well, they can't keep a driver. They don't want to keep a driver.
They've got too many drivers.
Who was it in the seat? I forget now. Is it Senna?
Senna's been there all but one, I think, hasn't he?
Yep, Silverstone.
Yeah.
And Yamamoto.
Yamamoto
local
must
favorite.
Have been there,
so
yeah.
He had to be there. Bit of a nightmare, that team. Rather embarrassing.
I think we know by now that they've lost interest in Chandok because he wasn't even at the circuit, was he?
They wouldn't pay for an airline ticket for the guy. That's quite sad. But I'll tell you what was of interest was how well Kleon did. And I know you're no fan of Christian Kleon, but I thought Kleon showed up Senna something rotten in Singapore, to a point you have to question if something wasn't drastically wrong with Senna's car.
Kleon does have a lot more experience.
Yeah, but not recent experience. And you've seen Michael Schumacher come back in the car and not be any quicker at all. Michael Schumacher gets in that car. He has no speed and no pace and can't hold a candle to his teammate. Christian Kleon gets he comes back within similar circumstances. He aces his teammate in qualifying. He aces him in the race. It seems rather strange. So I question Senna's quality and whether or not he shouldn't maybe be let go in place of Chandok / Yamamoto or Chandok / Kleon. Might be a fine lineup.
We did have an excellent guest post from Bridget who went through some astonishing statistics that I didn't understand. I'll
Great
be
grass.
Honest. I'll hold my hands up and say they were way above my head. But I did like the conclusion she came to, and they did say that Senna is perhaps not as good as we might have thought.
I don't think he's
He's always seemed to be the stronger one of the team. Maybe not so much compared to Chandok, but definitely compared to Yamamoto.
But then who wouldn't be compared to Yamamoto?
That's true.
I mean, people keep telling me that Yamamoto's doing a great job. Well, maybe Senna's not doing a very good job by comparison. That could be the problem. But yet he still seems to be in the car every single week.
It's never a surprise to see the HRT cars tucked up at the back of the grid, along with Lotus and Virgin. It's always those three. But only Richard Branson and Tony Fernandez have been moaning about the blue flags.
Vocal would be a better word.
Very vocal.
Moaning is a bit harsh.
They are moaning a little bit.
They're complaining to a certain extent, I suppose. Yeah, where do you stand on the blue flag debate? What do you reckon? Should we see an end to blue flags? Do you think they're unnecessary in Formula One?
Well, Tony Fernandez suggested the idea first, and Richard Branson agreed, which is unusual because they're normally bitter rivals. but he said, drivers are paid to overtake. I think it would be good for the sport to get rid of blue flags. I think racing is always getting past people and overtaking and adding a little bit of je ne sais quoi.
Oh, how very
continental.
That's the word I was looking for.
And also the Virgin Racing CEO, Graham Loudon, said
Loudon,
I don't know. We get blue flagged 3 seconds before someone approaches us. 3 seconds is almost a lap, and you have to let them by within four corners. I don't know what 3 seconds is almost a lap means. Laps are usually about a minute.
No, it takes essentially a lap to make up that 3 seconds when a car comes behind.
So it's definitely true that it can ruin the laps that they're on. That mm-hmm. we know that is true.
No argument there.
But there is an argument that, for instance, if they abolished blue flags and there was no blue flags, is there going to be a replacement principle, or are they just saying that drivers shouldn't have to let each other pass? Because I know if I was someone like Mark Webber and I came across Yamamoto and he didn't have to get out of my way, I'm going to be a bit scared.
Yeah, there's a couple of different points to this, I guess. Firstly, blue flags, you'll find blue flags, I think, in most forms of racing. We see them when we watch IndyCar. You see the blue flags at Le Mans races too. So I'm sure most forms of motorsport have some form of signal to get the slower cars out of the way. What you never, ever, ever want to see is a championship decided by a backmarker getting in the way. So bringing Mark Webber into the argument, it's a great one, because if there was only a certain number of points in it, we're in the last race of the season, and you've got a very slow car who trips up the championship leader and ruins it for another guy, that is no way to see a championship end, and that would be very, very frustrating for all Formula One fans, and nobody wants to get up at God knows what time in the morning to see something like that happen. So you do, I believe they serve a good point. They could serve a good purpose. there is no reason to get rid of the blue flags. I get that the 3-second thing is maybe an issue, but also I suspect that next year, as there are no new teams coming into Formula One, that all of the existing teams, possibly with the exception of HRT, will get quicker. And therefore, they will see less blue flags. Surely the answer is, rather than complaining about blue flags, make your car faster and get lapped less often.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to have been a real problem this year because the slower cars really are that much slower. I mean, we're talking 2 or 3 laps down, sometimes even 5 laps down on the leaders. And that is quite unusual. It hasn't been that way for a few seasons now, I think.
And that's the FIA's fault for leaving it so late to let the new teams in. They're the people who should be taking the blame, not the marshals with the blue flags. But although, also, all the race director calling the blue flags.
Also, I mean, it is unfair for the slower drivers to have their laps compromised because they are racing as well. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But it's also unfair for the top drivers to have their race compromised by people who aren't even on the same lap as them. And you would think that being faster at least gives you a little bit of grace in that instance. You would sort of favour the drivers to at the top because then it gives the Virgins and the Lotuses of this world something to aim for.
I also think it's a skill, to a certain degree, that a very good backmarker driver will know the best times to get out of somebody's way and lose the least amount of time and not lose a position. So there's a certain, you know, if your driver is losing places due to blue flags, perhaps you haven't got the best driver for the job, and maybe that should be taken into consideration when you consider taking on a driver, because that is a skill, and there's, you know, there's time to be lost and to be gained when doing that.
And there's also an argument to say that, say, Glock from Virgin is racing Kovalainen from Lotus. They're both going to be blue flagged quite a lot. Mm. And so there's that, it's the same for everyone argument over again.
Well, it's the same for everybody who's in a slow car or a slower car. I guess one issue you might get to is when the midfield start overtaking the tail-enders, and that is a problem. But again, it's only a problem this year. So I understand what Branson and Fernandez are saying, but I just think they're wrong. I don't think there's a call for it. I don't think there's a need to review it. I think you'll find it in most forms of motorsport. There isn't a problem. Like, there's not an issue to be solved there.
One driver who probably has negotiated the blue flags quite well is Heikki Kovalainen, because he has won RG's Battle of the New Drivers.
I love this championship.
It's a whole other championship.
I'm sure we've talked about it on the show before, but just as a quick refresher, it is the battle of the new teams. They are the only teams who can score points based on their finishing position in the race. And RG's been keeping track of it all year. And congratulations to Heikki Kovalainen for taking that title.
Yeah, no one can beat him now. It's sort of an arbitrary point system, but the same for every race. It goes 10-6-4, 3-2-0. And Heikki now has 88 points ahead of Timo Glock, who is on 56. So he is unbeatable.
That's grand. And Lotus presumably are going to take the Constructors' Championship.
They are leading it by an awful lot. I don't think they have it sewn up yet, but they've got 140 points to Virgin's 111.
So they can do it the next race.
They are way ahead. And if you want to check out more about the new team's championship, go to northernwaffler.wordpress.com.
A fine site.
From one championship to another, then, this is the real one. I'm going to go with Webber.
Really?
He's got it in the bag.
No chance. I don't think so.
He needs to. It's his only chance.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing. And going back to the McLaren discussion we had earlier, how is it possible that Lewis Hamilton has been here before and looks to be falling apart at the seams?
Yeah.
And then you've got Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel, who neither of whom have been really anywhere near this close to a title in the past. They're both handling it very well. Mid-season major wobble from that team. But they've come back strong, and they look like the people to beat. I think McLaren may have thrown it away with all their efforts in Japan. It looks like it's gone for nothing.
Yeah. I did a blog post a while ago about Vettel, and I thought he'd tensed up a few races ago, and that's why he wasn't doing so well. And everyone said I was being ridiculous, and that wasn't true. And he was just happy again because he was beating his teammate and he'd gone on the up again.
Yep.
And I was talking nonsense, which wouldn't surprise me. So he is definitely on the way up, whereas McLaren seemed to be on the way down. Because honestly, Hamilton, he has 2 DNFs, which may or may not have been his fault. And then he crashes he comes to a race and he's like, I really need to do well. And he crashes in free practice and gets no running in until qualifying.
Yes. And this is a man with championship experience. I mean, Jenson Button, he looks very calm and relaxed, as he always does. He's probably in a worse position. Hey? He's really going to struggle. Alonso looks like he's up and ready for the fight. Although, I mean, he hasn't got a teammate to worry about. So I guess it's pretty easy for him. But I'm impressed by the Red Bull guys. I mean, they got a 1-2 at this race. Vettel never looked like anyone was ever going to get near him. We thought that the race would favour Red Bull. You have to say, they do look strong, but I still think Vettel could do it. I mean, it's at times this year, say, Spa, when he punted Jenson Button off, he looked completely at sea. And you wouldn't favour him for any championship. And it was a bit of a disaster, a couple of races for him. But he did very, very well at Suzuka. He looked in command at Suzuka.
It's interesting that you say that Alonso doesn't have a teammate to worry about, because I hadn't thought of that, but that does seem to be a problem. I mean, we know that Red Bulls can crash into each other sometimes.
Well, the question I guess you could ask is, were McLaren favouring Lewis by putting Jensen on a strange and non-favourable strategy?
It was weird, and I think he did question it afterwards, didn't
he? It was very odd. Nobody in their right mind would put a driver on that strategy. It hurt him in qualifying, and it hurt him in the race. Now, possibly, he thought he could gamble. He thought in order to beat Lewis, he had to do something differently. On the other hand, maybe the team were favouring their other driver in order to make sure that one gets ahead in the championship and they get the chance to favour one over the other. Because at the moment, with them so close to each other, I mean, how many points are they apart now? Something like, 3 points apart? You've got no chance of favouring one driver, even this late in the championship. You know, not to be fair. Not, you know, you can if you're Ferrari, you can do what you like and you don't give a stuff about the fans. I'm not going back to that point.
No.
I'm not going back there. But McLaren claimed to be fair racers and a fair team, and therefore they can do nothing to do that. And that's the problem the top two teams have. Their drivers are so close together.
And the championship is still wide open, even though obviously every race that goes by, it's getting closer and closer and harder for people like McLaren to pull it back. But it just seems like every race that goes by, it's like, yep, those top five, they're still in it. They could still do it.
Class of the field. And they finish in the top five.
Is it because,
how can you ask for more than that?
Is it because they're so close? Is it the points system changing that has made it that every race that goes by, we've got all these drivers?
No. I mean, no, there is an argument. You can sort of, you're getting into slightly murky waters here, because you might be suggesting that Bernie's medals idea might make a difference. Because at the moment, they changed the points this year, and it's made no difference. I don't think it's made any difference at all.
Well, it feels like it hasn't
made it more complicated.
I can't remember the numbers at all, except that it's 25 for a win, and it goes all the way down to 10. That's all, right? I could tell you.
No, yeah, probably. And what, 10th is one, maybe? I can probably guess that one. That's it. I may even be wrong.
I think there's an 18 in there somewhere too. I'm not sure. But anyway, I don't know. It feels like, in my head, I know that it doesn't actually make that difference, because I think it only expanded the gaps in the middle somewhat. It doesn't really change the difference between 1 and 2,
nope,
to the old system. But it just seems like such a surprise that there are 5 drivers still in it. I mean, the last few championships we've watched, it's been down to 2 drivers, and it's been an epic battle, and it's been really good. But this is something brand new to me.
No one driver has been flawless. I mean, you can pick any driver in the top five and name a mistake they made that gave them a DNF. I think every driver in the top five had a DNF. I mean, you can pick 3 for Lewis easily off the top of your head, 3 for Vettel. Webber certainly made.
Even I can remember Lewis's DNF.
Yeah. Webber.
Well, they crashed into each other once, didn't they?
Lemon. Well, I think he scraped some points out of that, but he made a mistake by flying in Valencia. Alonso, he's made all sorts of mistakes. He's made so many mistakes, you wonder why they favour him as a number one driver. I mean, you've got every single one of these drivers has been making mistakes. If anybody had managed to pull the season together and not make any, then they'd be leading. I mean, Jensen, the only thing that actually comes to mind for Jensen was Monaco, and that wasn't his fault when they melted his engine, that was a team mistake. But yeah, I mean, what you need is a consistent driver who never makes any mistakes in a fast car, and none of them are that this year, and that's what the difference is.
And why has that suddenly become the case? That's the other interesting thing.
That's a good point. Pressure?
Because last year, most of the top teams, Ferrari and McLaren and Red Bull, they were, well, not so much Red Bull, because we've always known them as fragile, but they were pretty flawless, you know, these pit stops, they never had any problems. Yep. You occasionally saw a Ferrari running down Singapore.
I recall last year Lewis having a mechanical failure in Abu Dhabi, and we couldn't remember the last time he had one.
Yeah.
It wasn't that season because the car was bulletproof. And again, people are just pushing too hard. Minor changes to the regulations, you wouldn't expect it this year. The F-duct caught people by surprise, but I'm amazed that there has been a major development race, and teams are pushing each other harder and harder, and I guess that's what it's down to. And it's just down to drivers just not being on it when they had to.
Seems like such a scrappy year, which is good for us, because obviously each race that goes by, it's all up for grabs and anything could happen, and it's all very exciting, and we never really know who's going to do well, which is much better than at the beginning of the year when it looked like Red Bull were going to win everything ever.
I wouldn't trust any driver, any of the top five drivers, not to make a mistake going into the last 3 races. I really wouldn't. I mean, Alonso threw away a surefire decent finish in Spa with a stupid rookie error that you wouldn't, you know, in the past I'd have bet the farm on Alonso in the wet at Spa, And he just chucked it away. So every driver is flawed and every driver is prone to making mistakes.
I wonder if the F-duct thing has made more of a difference because they've got something else to more concentrate busy. On and, mm. and it's made a difference that we don't really see because you never know whether they're using it
they're
or not.
They're more active in the cockpit. Yeah,
I it think might it be was, interesting if it's banned next year to see whether they all tighten up again and yeah. get better again. Yeah. Feedback. We do have a little feedback section, even though no one knew we were doing a show.
They preempted a show that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Who could possibly have that kind of foresight?
Well, it's someone called Fabio Jesus.
Well, there you go.
Which is a great name.
That explains it.
And he sent a message through our contact form and it said, "Hello there. I have worked with fitness and sports science for over 10 years and recently I finished my MSc in Applied Sports Sciences and Human Performance at Brunel University, where I dedicated most of my time to study the physical demands of motor racing. I now find myself in a difficult position where I don't know where to look for jobs to work with motor racing drivers and their fitness. Could you help? Thanks for your time, Fabio Jesus."
Yep.
Now, I mean, we don't have that many contacts in the paddock or anything.
One person springs to mind, and that is Mr. Mike Garth, who we mentioned on the show in the past.
We went to the Porsche
Human Performance Center.
Yeah.
The title sounds almost apt, doesn't it?
Human Performance. That does ring a bell.
That sounds like it would sort Fabio's issue there. So yeah, the Human Performance Center is geared to exactly the kind of thing that's being described there. And Mike, although he does more psychology, I think, he was more into race psychology. And
he certainly got inside our heads.
Yes, and that kind of thing. I suspect he may be able to help in that way. So Mike's website is sun1400.
Yep, and he's also on Twitter.
Yes.
As Mike Garth.
Link in the show notes. Been a long time since we've said that.
And if anyone else has any questions, we're sort of tentatively back. So you can email me, christine@sidepodcast.com, or use the contact form at sidepodcast.com/about. And we'll try and answer your questions. Housekeeping. I don't know about you, but I think housekeeping could take up a whole show by itself. Because
what we've done in 6 months.
When we sort of downshifted, we didn't stop. We didn't just go on holiday. We basically turned all our attention, well, you did, certainly, turned all your attention to redesigning the website in all manner of ways.
Yeah, it's worth saying that much of the frustration that led to downshifting was that there's an awful lot of exciting and interesting things going on. They translate to our website, but also outside of Soap Podcast. And watching dull races really didn't feel like a good
talking
use
about
of my
dull
time.
Races.
Yeah, things just didn't really feel like a really useful way to spend my time. And it's also worth mentioning that this year I'm still not really into this championship, despite it being a very close championship. The Suzuka race was really the first race that I've actually properly enjoyed, mostly due to the chaos in qualifying. I like things to be a bit different. It was nice to mix it up a bit. So I haven't really totally been into this season, but I have been into lots of stuff that's been going on the site. And one of the key things I think has been the Fact by Fatbox, which has just been mega. And it's something we had in mind for, it's an idea we had in mind for a very long time. It's probably about 2 years now, and it wasn't happening when we were watching very dull races and talking about very dull races and not spending our time wisely. And since we've managed to downshift and since we managed to take a break from doing this stuff, it's come on leaps and bounds, and it's mega. I love it now.
It's mega.
I love it to pieces. The Fact Web Fact Box might well be the best thing we've ever done.
Yeah. Now, it was only just introduced when we were last podcasting, so it's worth saying what it is.
Mm.
Mostly during qualifying and the race, it's sort of like live updates.
Yep.
And includes excellent things like graphs, charts, information, interviews, quotes, tweets, all the kind of things that you want to know, whether you're watching it or whether you can't, you know, see the screen or for whatever reason. And it's also there as a replay afterwards, so you get to read through it all and catch up with what you've missed. It's kind of hard to explain. You probably need to go to the site and check it out. But it's also worth saying that when we introduced it back in April or whenever it was, basically each update was just a piece of text.
It wasn't what we had in mind.
And now, if you look at the difference between the two, absolutely incredible. There are pictures, there's italics, there's graphs, there's tables.
Italics, you're selling the pictures. Fact box on the typeface.
Yeah, I didn't mean that. There's pictures, tables. It's amazing.
Yes, and also it's not done yet. We're still working on it. But the bulk of it, the hard work, the legwork of the Fact Box has been done, and we can continue to improve it through the next races towards the end of the season and for next year. I genuinely do believe it's the best thing we've done. It's a perfect mix of technology and what we try to do at Side Podcast, which is make Formula One more accessible, and it's a great aggregator of lots of disparate information and then displaying it in a really, really, really simple way. There are other live updaters around on the web. Autosport do a fine live updating.
We definitely don't claim to be the first or the best.
No, but the thing with the Autosport Live one and various other ones is they are quite geeky.
Yeah,
and you need to be up on your motorsport.
The Autosport one is definitely aimed at fans hardcore. Who just can't see. There's times, there's laps, there's all kinds of information.
It's hardcore fans, whereas Fatboy Factbox is definitely, this is the most basic way to display the information that you need to know. And that's what it is. It's a secondary stream of information. It's kind of similar to what you might get on the television, but you can refer back to it at any point, and it's much more interactive. It's exactly what you want from F1.com's live timing, really. And you know, the data that comes along with the timing system. That's what it really is aiming to be, because FOM aren't prepared to do that.
And we know that F1.com is an evil site with horrible rollovers.
Yes. So we're plugging the gaps, and I think we've done a really good job.
We don't have rollovers.
No, we don't. It took downshifting to get it done, because there is no way that would have happened. That would have been on the back burner. If we'd have kept podcasting, it would have been on the back burner till the off season, and it would have been more frustrating, and it would never have got done. But that's just one improvement. There's even more. We've been so busy on the website. What else have we been doing?
Yes. The other thing is, I just wanted to say that it is hard to explain the Factbox in audio. But you did write an excellent post when we introduced the new updates.
Don't tell me. Link in the show notes.
There'll be a link in the show
notes. I recommend to anybody listening to this show, go to the website, find the show notes, find the links, because there's going to be plenty of them.
Yeah. So the second thing, well, there's been loads of things, but the second major thing is what we are calling the dashboard.
It used to be called
the LCLT, which stands for the Live Commenting Live thing.
And it's been rebranded and renamed. And now it serves another purpose. And what does it do now?
Well, I'll tell you what it does have in it is the Factboat Factbox, just to link those two together. Right. But basically, it's a place for you, again, to bring in lots of different bits of information. So you've got the comments from SciPodcast in whatever thread you're following, which would probably be a live thread.
It'll be a race thread or a qualifying thread or a place where everybody gets together to discuss.
Yeah, it's got the Factbite Fact Box to follow along as we do those updates. And it's also got the epic F1 Twitter list that you put together, which basically has everyone you could ever associate with F1.
So there's a Twitter aggregator, a Fact by Fact Box aggregator, and a comment aggregator all in one page.
There's other things. The calendar is in there. And there are a few other boxes to do with thread information and stuff.
And more to come. It's not finished yet.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all... it's quite brand new, isn't it? It was only introduced a few weeks ago. Yep. But it's brand new and it's shiny and we love it.
Absolutely. And just some more plugs while we're there. Since we last podcasted, we have a new homepage, and that's bright and shiny new. Contains all sorts of funky stuff.
Yeah.
Big fan of that. Lots of other updates on the website. Do come to the website. Have a look around. I think my favourite feature of all is the More button on the navigation at the top. Do click on that, because that will reveal a whole host of other content within the website.
It's a whole SciPod world.
It is a whole SciPod world. I like that.
I think that might be all we have to talk about.
Hey.
I'm disappointed.
No.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you enjoy podcasting.
I do.
What a shocker.
I like it.
Change your mind?
I missed it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. I can't say that through this season we would have made particularly good podcasts, because for a lot of it I have been quite negative and quite depressed. And like I said, this race was really the first race in a long time I've actually got behind. It was the first race for almost the whole year that I've watched every single minute of every single session. I outlasted the BBC, which is unusual.
Did you watch all of the session where only two cars went out?
Yeah, I watched the whole of FP3.
You crazy fool.
No, every car went out. Every car turned in a lap, but only two cars set a time, which was Timo.
Oh, well, that's all right,
Jaime.
Then.
Yeah, Timo and Jaime set a time. That was really boring, but it's okay. I mean, it was different. That was the thing. So sometimes Formula One can get quite repetitive, and it's nice to mix it all up a bit. And although people keep telling me it's the best season in years, I haven't been feeling it. But you know, maybe I'm looking forward to next year. And you know, even earlier this year, I almost thought for a second that Bernie's medals idea might be good. So depressed was I. That's how bad it was. But
let's not get into
that. I'm looking forward to 2011. And if we do another podcast in the future, that would be grand too.
You're not getting out of it that easily.
Really?
I think we're going to do a couple more podcasts, and we'll definitely do some kind of post-season wrap up. I don't know what the future holds for the off season or next year or anything. We're not even thinking that far. This is just our surprise podcast, and we know we'll do a couple more.
Normally at this point in the season, I'm really looking forward to the off season, whereas I'm not so bothered about it this year. Because
you've had your off season already.
I've had my off season in the middle of the season, so I'm not so fussed about it. I think it probably tells you a lot about how much I was enjoying Formula One that I was looking forward to last year's off season so much. So possibly that maybe should have been an alarm bell ringing. However, I'm not so fussed about this one, so I'm sure we'll get lots done in the off season when there's less racing to cover. Although, presumably, if the racing's going on till November, it'll be a shorter off season, and with 20 races next year,
Let's not talk about next year.
No, let's not go there. 20 races. Eight, Bernie. Eight.
What? Hey.
Eight races.
We're keeping this a positive podcast.
Hey, I'm still positive. And you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time.